Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Broderick Turner is a visiting fellow at Harvard who studies racism in tech, like AI. He runs the Technology, Race, and Prejudice Lab, Trap Lab for short, an homage to the popular hip-hop subgenre. He joins us now to tell us more about his work. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Carrie. I'm excited.
Okay, so I'm going to set the scene a little bit and have you tell us a story. I know that you said that your fascination with this intersection of race and technology began because of something that happened to you while you were living in Miami. You were a PhD student at Florida International University at the time, and I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, so anyone that knows me well knows that my favorite thing in the world is to take a nap. And so I had finished...
Don't blame you.
No, right, thank you. So I'd finished class for the day and said, I'm going to go home and take a nap. But we had just gotten this new security system installed in our house, and I forgot to turn it off and had a silent alarm. So I fell asleep. I guess the silent alarm goes off. And then about 35, 40 minutes later, you know, that time period you slept too long, you're a little groggy from a nap, right? I wake up and with yelling all around me, and there is a gun pointed in my face, and there are these two police officers that are telling me, get down, stand up, put your hands behind your back, hands away. And I had no idea what was going on. I'm trying to like explain this is my house, and I'm also unsure, maybe are they robbing me? I don't know where I am. You know, they're yelling and they're being very, very, very aggressive. And then I remembered, I'm not like the world's quickest person on my feet. But
well,
this is
especially
one of those,
then, after, right after a nap, right?
Exactly, yeah. Right? But this is one of those times where I think my brain was firing all cylinders. And I remembered that we had these cameras installed as part of the security system that weren't quite working correctly. They didn't know that. And so I said to them, officers, just so you know, you're being recorded right now, and everything's being streamed to the cloud. And I would suggest, right, that if you don't want to end up on the news, that you calm down, because there are multiple cameras in this room. There's the one you can see, and there's some you can't.
Yeah.
It was lying through my teeth, right, because the cameras weren't working. But they didn't know that, and they totally changed their behavior. They calmed down. They started talking to me in calmer voices, trying to explain what's going on, trying to explain this is my house. If you look around, there's a picture of me and my wife on the wall. Eventually, you know, my wife came home. I was still in handcuffs. She came home. We were able to de-escalate.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But it was from that moment I said, like, this is scary, right? Like, we have this technology. And we're, Mastilla, something that your producer, Rob, said, he said that we can take technology, think of it as a Mentos that we're dropping into the Coke bottle that is like racism in America, right? And then we're shaking it up and seeing what happens. And so my interest in studying this stuff kind of stemmed from there, right? Because I went, why did they change their behavior so much?
Yeah.
How do other people think about this stuff? Like, how do communities think about body cam or dash cam footage that comes out? And it started this whole journey. From horrible things, good things can happen.
Right, for sure. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, technology intersected in both cases here with your security camera, but then also with you mentioning the cameras, even though they didn't work, it was like it you know, totally changed the trajectory of what 100%. Was going to happen to you that afternoon.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you're running what you call the Trap Lab.
Yep.
And so on the website, you say our goal is to explore how race and racism underlie the foundation of marketing, the marketplace, consumer technology, and marketing research. So can you tell me a little bit more about what that means in layman's terms?
Sure. So here's how I think about it. The past for Black people in America is trash, right? Like if we go back 100 years, it's pretty bad. You go back 200, it's pretty bad. And then the data that we have from the past is also weird and kind of garbage, right? The present, currently, things are pretty good, right? Like this is probably the best time ever to be alive, period.
Right.
But if we're going to build the future from past data or the past understanding, are we just going to basically reinvent the past and make it worse? And so the reason the Trap Lab exists is that we're sitting in this space between the past and the future and trying to figure out what levers can we move, right? What can we change? What policies can we enact inside of a business or inside of a government organization so that the future is as good or better than the present is, and the future does not just reinvent the past.
Right. And I mean, would you say it's like keeping kind of old school racism out of new school technology, like keeping like old ideas, old data
100%.
Out of, you know, bleeding into today and maybe what's, you know, evolved from that?
100%. Right. And it's being able to say, okay, look, this technology could be great, right? Like it could be amazing. But
because I guess in theory, technology is neutral, or would
100%.
You say it's neutral?
Now, okay. I would, the way I think about this, right? When we talk to companies, for instance, about technology and we're trying to get them to think about how it might impact equity or ethics, right? There are really three questions that we have to ask ourselves. The first is, what does the tool actually do now? Not what do you want it to do, not what it could do in the future. What does it do, right? So we establish that. The second thing we want to know for any tool, right? And we can say AI, machine learning, facial recognition, whatever, right? For any tool, who does it empower? Who does it disempower, right? Because every tool is going to give somebody more power or has a possibility to give someone less power, right? And then the last question we want to ask is, what is the average? Like, what's the modal use case for that technology, right? So I'll give you an example. After a school shooting, for instance,
right.
Tech companies, a lot of tech companies will come out and say, we have a tech solution for this. You know, we're going to put robots that come out of the wall to stop school shooters, or we'll have, you know, a laser or whatever.
That's yeah, or stop. Like the sound detecting technology or something I've heard of. Yeah.
100%, right? And so for those use cases, yeah, super effective, right? It would reduce some of the harm from a school shooting, right? Makes sense. But, like, it lives in today, right? There are very, very, very few school shootings if you consider the denominator is all of the time you spend in school. And so then the question is, if that's the case, who have we empowered, right? We've empowered some police forces. We've empowered some school administrators, but we've disempowered school shooters, also disempowered students in the school. And then what's the modal use case? Are we just going to have robots roaming the hall? Because then how are they going to be used? Are they going to be used to stop classroom distractions, right? That gets very dark very quickly.
Right.
Are they going to roll around the hallway? And, you know, that gets very dystopian very quickly. And so if we think about those three questions, right, like what does this thing actually do? Who does it empower or disempower? And then how is it actually going to be used day to day? It helps us start to think, and like, is this the right use for this? Is this the best use for this? And can we do anything if we're going to use this to make it more equitable and better for people that it's going to impact?
Right. So it's funny listening to you break this down for me. It sounds like you've done this many times before. As a marketing professor, too, especially with the research, you're probably breaking all of this down to business leaders and talking to them about like what technology used in a non-racist way can look like. So can you tell me first how you talk to business leaders and, you know, how do those conversations go? What do you start with?
Yeah, so I'm really lucky, right, that I not only get to talk to current business leaders, right? So like as part of this this Institute for the Study of Business and Global Society, right? Such a hefty title, right?
Right,
at Harvard, I get to interface with CEOs currently that are working on this, right? And then I also get to teach future business leaders, right? So I'm a professor at Virginia Tech at Pamplin, and I get to work with these students that are working on this stuff now that will be running these companies in the future. And when I talk to the future business leaders and current business leaders, I try to get them to think of the same thing, the same three questions, right? As they're thinking about any technology they're going to roll out. Again, you have to ask yourself, what does it actually do, right? Like, that's hard because the hype will tell you, you know, we're going to have some AI overlord in 10 years or Skynet's going to happen or the Matrix is going to hit us.
Right, yeah.
But mostly it's a linear regression. It's Y equals MX plus B is not doing all of those things today. All right. So what does it actually do? All right. And then you ask your future CEOs, who does this empower? Does it empower you? All right. You'll be surprised that often the technology that people will roll out, like, is just getting rolled out because it's cool, right? Or it's interesting, or somebody else did it and they don't want to have FOMO. And so you try to just pull them back a little bit and go, what happens inside of your company or outside of your company when you enact this, all right? And then again, how will this be used every day? And I find that often people haven't asked themselves that question. They go, they believe the pitch that this is going to be this groundbreaking, like, new, amazing thing. And I just want people to go, how does this tool actually work? And then use the tool that way.
So I want to bring things to Boston a little bit right now, or the intersection of technology and race in Boston. You know, it would appear that Boston is near the forefront of weeding out racist technology. In 2020, for example, the city banned facial surveillance technology. And I know that facial surveillance technology is a focus of yours in the Trap Lab. Mm-hmm. Can you explain, though, why that kind of technology is controversial and maybe why a city like Boston would want to ban it?
Sure. So something that we think about, again, in the Trap Lab, we talked about those three questions that come up. But when we think about how does the technology actually work, right?
These questions keep popping up.
Right. So how does it work is that, you know, AI is not smart. And so what it's doing is it has a bunch of training data of faces, right? But who's in the training data? Often those training sets are kind of weighted, or the test sets to make sure they're working are weighted. So you have an overrepresentation of like phenotypic white faces, and not a lot of black faces or not a lot of Asian faces, for instance.
Right.
And so these things will highlight that, you know, we've found some criminal or some suspect, but if there weren't a lot of these faces in the training set to begin with, then you run the risk of what we call a type one error, like a false positive, that we've identified somebody that incorrectly.
Right.
And then the issue is in any type of like false identification is that they now have to go through the system of policing and law enforcement and the law, which is relatively racist in a lot of ways. And so, you know, it's the same thing for technology. Like you mentioned the ShotSpotter, or I can't remember, the sound thinking, right?
ShotSpotter, yes,
right?
That's correct.
All right, so ShotSpotter makes a lot of sense, right? It goes, we can, know when a gunshot happens, and then we're going to send police officers to that gunshot. But we go back to this thing of type one error. Does it know that it's a gunshot, or is it just a loud sound? All right. And then why did we put them in these particular neighborhoods?
Right.
One argument is like this is where the gunshots happen. Right. But how did you know the gunshots happened there? Someone must have called it in. And we can go to like old school statistics. Right.
Right.
World War II, they had that plane flying around and they figured out that like here are the bullet holes. Right. Why are the bullet holes here? Like, where do we reinforce? We reinforce the bullet holes. Doesn't help. We reinforce where there are no bullet holes, right? Maybe that helps.
Right, right. Okay, so we have about a minute
left. Oh, my bad.
No, that is okay. I want to squeeze in one more question
sure.
though for you. You have a conference coming up tomorrow.
Yes.
Okay, you're calling it an unconference?
Unconference,
so
yeah.
What does that mean, and what's it going to look like?
So tomorrow, we've gotten together a bunch of the people that have been coming to this Trap Lab for the last 2 years. In person, and we have computer scientists, sociologists, psychologists, economists, and we're going to get together and workshop messy ideas, stuff that's still early, right? To say, you know, how can we make this better, right? How can something that a psychologist understands over here be used by computer science over here so that, again, we can take the present and look at the past and go, what can we turn here to make the future better and brighter? And so I'm really excited because it'd be the first time I get to meet some of these people in person. We've been on Zoom for a couple of years now, and it's exciting stuff for us.
Yeah, yeah, great. All right. Well, Broderick Turner, thank you so much for joining me today. Broderick is a visiting fellow at Harvard University. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I can't give up a shout out. If you're interested in this work, join thetrap.com. You can find out more about us. And again, I'm really happy to be here.